We spoke a couple of weeks ago here on Air America. And so obviously, not to be redundant, but Saturday was the big House vote on the health care bill. And you and most of the Progressive Caucus voted for it. Is this the bill you were hoping for?
No, it wasn't. Of course, our expectations going into this process was, first of all, to try to, prematurely, leadership and the White House decided to take a single payer off the table, we were left to defend a robust public plan. And what we ended up with is less than that in the negotiated plan, with the opportunity to try to either strengthen it and go into battle with the Senate, for lack of a better word, on what the public influence is going to be in this whole health care reform. So the issue of satisfaction is it's a vote that we needed to take to move on. Is it the satisfying vote that many of us wanted? No.
I see. So the goal was really to advance the bill to keep the health care reform effort alive so that you can get to the next level and try to strengthen it?
And try to strengthen it and quite frankly have, the what's coming from the Senate, given what Lieberman has said and Backus and Nelson and Snow and Landrieu is, no public option. If there is one, it'll be riddled with triggers and opt-out clauses that effectively would kill the public option. So for the Progressive Caucus and the progressive community to stay in this fight, we have to have a dog in the fight. And our dog is, more regulatory control and antitrust control over insurance companies, and quite importantly, to make sure that we don't any further weaken the public option. And that's going to be how we define our votes going into this discussion with the Senate. But the pressure now shifts to the Senate, and that's where we're going to concentrate our energy on in the next few months.
Right. Now, before we get to the Senate, let me ask about the Stupak Amendment. That just seemingly came out of left field.
It was a surprise and horribly disappointing in that, I think my daughter put it best when she said, you just sacrificed women's rights in order to move the bill forward. And it was, honestly, I didn't have a good response for that. And, we've all said that if it comes back that way, we're not going to vote for it. But it was a way to accommodate the Blue Dog Coalition. It was a way to satisfy the more conservative members of our caucus. And I wonder if we gave away too much. I voted against the amendment, but once it was allowed on the floor, there was certainty that it was going to pass.
It was a stunning moment. My jaw dropped. And obviously, there's a huge movement to kill that amendment, make sure it doesn't come into the final bill after conference. And I just saw a story from Barbara Boxer saying that they've got the votes in the Senate to kill any semblance of a similar amendment there. And even the president yesterday spoke out and said, no, this is not what this health care reform is supposed
right.
to be.
I feel good about those statements. I think those votes were never solid. In fact, a good 9 or 10 of the people that voted for the Stupak Amendment, Democrats, went ahead and voted against the bill.
Unbelievable.
And so that's always been my point, that there is, we're having a theological argument here, and that's not going to change. Some members are not going to change on it, and people that are against the bill are going to be against the bill. A lot of my friends have said, well, with no single payer, everybody should have voted against it. And, there's some remote logic to that, but for the progressive community not to have a dog in the fight coming up, I think would be a big mistake.
I agree with you. Now, but two of the members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, of which you are the co-chair, Dennis Kucinich and Eric Massa, did stand on their convictions and voted against the bill.
No, I admire Dennis very, very much. He's one of, he's not only a peer and a colleague, but he is someone who we won. I'm on the committee with him. We won the amendment to have the state's abilities to opt in into single payer, which mm-hmm. was a compromise on the single payer issue because it wasn't a national program, but at least we could build campaigns in the states to try to promote that idea, and states wouldn't be punished for it. But when that was stripped, then effectively took away even that ability to do that. And you know, Dennis was the architect of that, and I have nothing for it, but admiration for Dennis's stand on that. There was no criticism involved in that. And Mr. Massai, you know, he was for single payer, then he was against the whole bill, then he was for it. So I haven't quite clarified where he was coming from. But in terms of Dennis, I don't question his integrity on this at all.
No, nor do I. I applaud him for standing his ground. And I applaud you as well for fighting for the progressive members of the country. And we seem to be sort of a vastly underheard, I want to say, majority. I think, you know, the 2008 election showed that we want change.
Well, one of the things in this last election is that, you know, the Republicans felt emboldened and the Democrats are scrambling about how we get back to the center. I think the results of that election, when you really look at it, was an undervote. And that undervote in that election among the Democratic base, which is essentially progressive, which is essentially of color, which is essentially women, we stayed home in that sense. And if we don't participate, then that majority that we all want to be there and to be doing things is jeopardized, and it's jeopardized through our own inactivity. The base needs to be satisfied, whether in a political sense or in a policy sense. And so far, there's a sense that we're being taken for granted, and the things that were promised and the things that are being delivered are not the same.
Most definitely. So I've been accused in recent weeks of whining a little bit about the president and what he's actually done as opposed to what he promised in the campaign. Are you seeing him coming through on the things that he said he was going to do?
Somebody has said that, you know, I made a comment, I think, you know, I was badly paraphrasing Gandhi, but here, you know, the compromise is a game, is a process of give and take, and I understand that. We all do. You know, public policy is, my purity is not going to be the end product, but it is a process of give and take, and so far it's been all give in terms of progressive issues and no take. And so if there's a disappointment, it's been on that, I think, stilted strategy. Let's give in as much as we can and see if we can get something, as opposed to drawing a line, this is what we want, and we'll work with you, but this is the essential principle that we're trying to achieve. And I think that's where that great pulpit of the White House needs to be heard a lot more than it's being heard.
I agree. How do we make them be heard more?
Well, I hope these elections were a lesson. I hope as we go through this healthcare thing, and that you see the progressive community begin to peel away from support for healthcare reform, not because we don't want it, but because it is not resembling what we think it should be in terms of public participation, public option, control of insurance companies, control of cost, and an equal playing field with the private insurance company. Those things begin to dissipate and to go away, then our support for passage is jeopardized, and if we don't support it, it's not going to happen.
All right. Congressman Raul Grijalva from Arizona, co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for fighting the good fight for us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.